WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. The class action lawsuit against the Shenandoah Valley Juvenile Center may be delayed as lawyers try to add a fourth team to the suit. A look at the new law limiting school suspensions in Virginia, and who is funding the candidates for U.S. Senate in Virginia, and why. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, July 4th.
Support for the WMRA Daily comes from the shops at Stonefield at Route 29 and Hydraulic Road in Charlottesville, featuring a collection of shopping, dining, and entertainment experiences with parking available. Learn more at shopsatstonefield.com.
Class action lawsuit against a juvenile detention center near Stanton may be delayed. Lawyers in the case are trying to replace the original three migrant plaintiffs with a fourth person alleging severe abuse against the Shenandoah Valley Juvenile Center. The suit originally was filed on behalf of three plaintiffs, identified only as John Doe 1, 2, and 3, but the news leader reports that one has withdrawn from participation in the suit, and the other two have been deported to their home countries. Lawyers for the center on Tuesday asked a judge to postpone a hearing scheduled for September in order to investigate claims of the fourth teenager who is still held at the center. The Latino teens allege being beaten while handcuffed, locked up for long periods in solitary confinement, and left nude and shivering in concrete cells. The center denies the allegations. Hundreds of thousands of people in Virginia are about to get health insurance as a result of Medicaid expansion, but as Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports, the program has been growing even before the expansion.
In the last 20 years, Medicaid spending in Virginia has almost quadrupled, according to numbers from the Kaiser Family Foundation. And now that Democrats have finally been able to expand Medicaid, David Barnes at Americans for Prosperity says Medicaid may end up swallowing the budget.
So Virginia is going to want to spend more money on the sort of least deserving of the Medicaid population, those, you know, people who could work but don't. And so you're going to just see them spending more and more money on those to get bigger reimbursements from the federal government.
Now, Virginia did impose work requirements for that Medicaid expansion, but Barnes and others worried that they won't be enforced or that courts might overturn the requirement, which has recently happened in Kentucky. But Frank Shafroth at George Mason University says Virginia's eligibility requirements are notoriously stingy.
The state ranks 48th in Medicaid enrollees as a percentage of the state population. So Virginia is sort of traditionally being relatively conservative.
Those eligibility requirements mean Virginia spends less on Medicaid than most states. And although the cost has quadrupled in the last 20 years in Virginia, the increase has been largely in line with other states. Michael Pope.
A significant piece of education-related legislation is now in effect in Virginia. It caps the length of school suspensions. Megan Pauley from partner station WCVE has the details.
Before the new law took effect, local school boards could use their discretion to grant long-term suspensions for a full calendar year, equal to punishment for an expulsion. But under Virginia's new law, school boards can only grant those long-term suspensions for up to 45 days, or 9 full weeks of school.
That is a quarter of the school year.
Amy Willard with the Legal Aid Justice Center has advocated for changes to how the state addresses school discipline and says while this legislation won't fix all of the current problems, it's at least a good start. In Richmond, I'm Megan Pauley, WMRA News.
Only four women have ever represented Virginia on Capitol Hill, and never a woman of color. Now, a Democratic candidate in Virginia's first congressional district hopes to change that. Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain reports.
Some have called it the year of women. Virginia Democrats have chosen female candidates to run up and down the ballot. Vanjie Williams says as a Black woman, she's felt supported emotionally, just not financially.
I have spoken to women, African-American women, all across the country, and they're going through the exact same thing. I'm not recognized by the DCCC. I'm not recognized in certain circles as a viable candidate, not because I'm not qualified or I don't have the experience, but because of my race.
Williams is running in Virginia's first district, which includes Fredericksburg, Ashland, and the Northern Neck. Incumbent Rob Whitman has consistently won re-election by large margins. Still, the Williams campaign points out that she's got a shot at being the first woman of color to represent Virginia on Capitol Hill, and that's an opportunity party leaders shouldn't write off. Jake Rubenstein is the Democratic Party of Virginia's communications director. He says they're all in.
We're fully deploying in that race. Rob Whitman's voted 90% of the time with Donald Trump. That's not where that district is. Mandy Williams' values and what she stands for is where that district is.
Rubenstein says the party has 7 staffers on the ground drumming up excitement about Williams' candidacy. In Richmond, I'm Mallory Nopain.
Finally, between 2012 and 2017, defense spending in Virginia fell by about 20%. This year, though, the Pentagon's budget is up, and just in time, the state has introduced a website where communities can find out what that means for them. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Houseman has details.
Just under 5% of the state's economy is dependent on Defense Department spending.
5,267 software developers are dependent on defense contracts, and that's 15% of all software developers in the state.
Chris Chimura is an economist who helped the state to develop a computer model to calculate the likely impact of Defense Department cuts and increased spending.
If we learned that some more ships were awarded, we can put that number in, and the model will tell us how many more people will be employed because of that, what sectors they will work in, and what skills they will have.
Mike Coleman is with the state's Department of Veterans and Defense Affairs. The new model, he says, will help cities and counties plan their economic development and job training programs while protecting small suppliers that could go out of business if a contract is lost.
It's important that all of these small defense contracts factors are recognized, and those that are critical to the supply chain are protected so that when defense spending goes back up, we haven't lost a significant resource.
There was, for example, a Virginia firm that made tents.
Introduce them to international markets, and all of a sudden they were producing tents in foreign markets as well.
The Department of Defense paid to develop the new model, which is free to anyone who'd like to use it, and it's inspired similar tools in more than a dozen other states. I'm Sandy Houseman.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your Independence Day.